I tell myself, it's not about comparing. But then I start wondering, what can they lift? Are they adding more weight to their barbell than I am? And suddenly, I'm not training. Then I realize, my journey is not theirs. I've earned every step. So I smile. My smile is the shape resilience takes to keep me moving. To put more smiles out into the world, Colgate has supported female athletes for over 50 years with the Colgate Women's Games, the nation's longest-running indoor track and field series for girls and women. Colgate, your smile is your strength.
Introducing the all-new Mazda CX-5, featuring more connection.
Hey, Google, where's the nearest Pilates class?
Safety that has your back. More discovery on the scenic routes. More passion in the details. And more control in changing weather. The all-new Mazda CX-5. More to move every side of you. See it in 5 films at MazdaUSA.com/5sides.
Google is a trademark of Google LLC. Sequences shortened and simulated.
NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning into Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 18, Episode 21. This week, we heard a great conversation between Bob and Justine Vanderloon about Justine's new book, Unreasonable Women. Justine's justice warrior work is not only incredible, it's incredibly important to understanding survival violence within abusive relationships and the court's failures to properly handle these type of cases. Today, I'm joined by Bob and Janet, and the three of us are here to discuss your listener questions. But before we get into that, do we have any housekeeping?
We do. We have scheduling to talk about. So next week will be a normal week for us as far as the follow-up goes. Becky and I are going on our first vacation with just the two of us in 10 years. We're taking a train ride in a little sleeper car all the way from here to the tiny town of Libby, Montana. So we're going to be gone for a week on that trip. So there's going to be no episodes the week of June 8th. So that week, there will not be, well, actually, kind of before that. So Sunday the 7th. So there will be an episode coming out this coming Sunday. And then there will be a follow-up next week. But then there will not be an episode on Sunday, June 7th. And there will not be a follow-up on Friday the 12th. We will be back on Sunday, June 14th. So I'll remind you guys again about that next week, but just, you know, the only episode to be dropping is we still have our kind of throwback Thursday episodes that I'm dropping on Thursdays. There will be a throwback Thursday episode. And the one that drops on the 11th of June will be, as I've been trying to do, relevant to the episode you have coming up on Sunday. You're going to hear from someone new to the show. Her name is Beth Braden, and she hosts the Time of Death podcast. Really interesting case that she's covering. She's a journalist. She's a researcher on another podcast, and she ventured into this case that she's investigating herself. A potential wrongful conviction case, but also there's like a lot of nuance involved in the case too. Like there's wrongful conviction discussion. There's death penalty discussion. There's someone with intellectual disabilities being sentenced to death. There's a whole lot of layers to it. She does a great job of breaking that down. So that episode is going to be coming out on this Sunday, and we'll do the follow-up for that next week. So your Throwback Thursday episode this week, anybody that's been paying attention, Chris Lambert of the Your Own Backyard podcast, who investigated the Kristen Smart case, there's some action going on in that case right now. They're actually using ground-penetrating radar. They're trying to find Kristen's body. If you had followed that case, due in large part to Chris's work, Paul Flores, years after the fact, was convicted of the murder of Kristen Smart. I think he was convicted of murder. If not, he was convicted in some way connected to the case because they never found her body. I interviewed Chris way back when he first was doing Your Own Backyard podcast. And with all that going on in the news right now, I thought it'd be cool for a throwback episode on Thursday for you guys to hear that old interview with Chris. I'm going to try to get him on the show right now, but he's kind of hard to get a hold of and he's super busy right now with all this. But that'll be coming up And then next week we have Gilbert King, who we had on years and years ago. He was covering the Leo Schofield. Is it Schofield case?
That's right.
So we've got that episode coming back as a Throwback Thursday episode. I am going to try to get Gilbert back on the show too to talk about the new seasons and then the new seasons of Ear Witness, which we've talked a little bit about on the show. And then when we come back from our holiday, years ago, our very last episode we did of True Crime Binge was with a podcaster named Ryan Wolf from New Zealand, who has a podcast called Guilt. We interviewed him when season one of Guilt first came out. Super interesting conversation. He's just now, so if you want to do some homework ahead of time, he's just now, I think today, the season finale episode of season six of Guilt just dropped. And so I'm going to be interviewing Ryan about season six of Guilt. We have that throwback episode coming out that week. Once we come back with Ryan, which is, I think, is the 14th of June, then we'll be back to our normal schedule. So that's all the scheduling stuff you got going up. Anybody listening to the Underestimated podcast, the third episode of the installment on the Kim Laro case and the Arthur Reed connection with all of those victims airs this Friday, or airs tomorrow, Wednesday. And then the Underestimated then is circling back to Gracie's group with the Brandi Peltz case. And then we're going to cycle back through all of them, have two or three more episodes to come out for Underestimated. So we still got another several weeks of that season two of Underestimated coming out. And with that being said, great interview with Justine. I loved my conversation I had with her back when she was doing the Believe Her podcast. Her work in this space is incredible. And her book, I'm still trying to, like, between everything else, get through reading her, because I was lucky enough to get an advanced copy of her book. So I've been through the first story. I'm partway through the second story. Really, really, really well written. And it's such an interesting topic. And I thought our conversation highlighted some of that. I'll wait to get into that till we have any questions and the conversation goes on. But yeah, it's another one of those. I love any time we can have a discussion in this space where there's a complex and layered thing that's happening that we're talking about, because this whole situation that she covers in her book, the three stories and the cases she covered in Believe Her, is just there's just so much complexity to it. I just found it incredibly interesting. But before I babble on anymore, what were you guys' thoughts?
I thought it was a great interview. I'm so excited to check out this book. Definitely. It's hard to say you're a fan of a podcast like Believe Her, because it is such a rage-inducing, upsetting story. And I think that's true of many kind of wrongful convictions. Or in the case of something like this, knowing, yes, she did do it, but the way the system saw it is so frustrating. But all that being said, I am absolutely a fan of Justine. And, you know, I was so blown away. Like, it felt, I think maybe to many of us, it might have felt familiar when you hear about her just kind of having this initial idea and thinking like, well, how hard can it be?
Yeah.
Or like, hey, what if I just, you know, throw out a few letters in the mail and see if, you know, and just the way that part of her story built out as you guys were talking about it, so that it was like, well, then it became like, I guess I'm handwriting these labels because I can't print stickers, and now
it's
thousands
crazy.
And thousands of letters are going out and I'm getting over 1,000 back. And like, just,
well, especially
wow.
In a world like in there's so much in true crime where people want to make some kind of content, and some of it's still well done, but it's like, well, let me quick figure out what I can research online and what I can get and go ahead and do this. Like the longevity of that and the determination of this,
7-8 years.
Yeah.
And like you said, handwriting labels and mailing all the letters and collecting all the data. She said she's not a math person and used some really big mathy terms like quantitative and qualitative. I'm like, what do you mean you're not you are a math person, whether you like it or not?
Well, she kept saying coding too. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. Like, I get the gist of it, but I don't know what that means.
Like, coding? Like, kids go to school to learn coding?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was great. And you know, and then I really appreciated you guys when you kind of drill down a little bit into... Yeah, the some of the statistics and how long it takes a battered woman to leave that partnership and how chilling and so true. And to your point, Bob, the more, you know, it's out there, the more it gets talked about. Hopefully the more people will have a more compassionate understanding of what kind of situation this is, that it's not, why don't you leave him? It's, is he going to let you leave and live? And it's just absolutely chilling. But that's what we're looking at.
Yeah. And it's such a, it's such a hard situation, because I've seen, you know, I've had just multiple people within my life that have been on different parts, you know, different sides of this, as far as being the woman who's in, whether it's emotional or physical abusive relationship. But then also, you know, people in my life that are friends with those people, and I've just had, you know, I've studied this kind of thing for so long that, you know, I can stand back and see what's happening. But, you know, I've had like people in my life to be like, you know, I'm just done with her. Like she's not going to get away from him. Like whatever, she's doing this to her, you know, that attitude from people who are like close friends with them. And so you see it happening. And then I'm also close with some people that have been, you know, in the relationship. And like, and then I've studied, you know, some of the work Laura Richards has done and Justine has done that we've written. So you start to understand the psychology of it. And it's just such a and it's so, so difficult, I think, for people, particularly like me as a man, but even for other women sometimes, because, you know, the people I'm talking about that are like, oh, I'm done with her. They, you know, there are other women that have been in maybe bad relationships in their lives. It's so hard for people to understand, like, it's not as simple as you think it is for them to get away. Like, and one thing that I find, and I don't remember if I was really good, if I really got into this in the conversation, but when it comes to like coercive control and some of the things, I find it very, very interesting that there is like this repeatable pattern that you see. You know, if you look at like Laura Richards, like dash risk assessment model, right? And if you look in like the, you know, all over online, you know, these signs that you're with a narcissist, and you know, there's all these things are out there, right? That there's like a playbook for abusive men to keep women, you know, in check, to keep them from leaving. And it's fascinating to me that it's like the playbook exists and they all do it, but I don't think they're all like, it's hard to articulate, but it's almost as if they're like, oh, let me look up what I can do to keep this person here. It's like they all
but
do the same thing naturally.
That it, yeah, exactly. That it's like instinctual to isolate people from their families. Like you're not necessarily looking up a Facebook page that tells you how to isolate your, you know, but you just kind of know to do it. Or it's observations. It's like what it's like innate to you because you observed it happening, or, you know, that's like obviously a reason to understand behavior, not a reason to excuse it. But
and
it's wild.
And I have a person in my life that was going through that recently, a young person who like had that conversation where I'm like, in a way for me to try to help is I'm like, listen, this is a predictable behavior.
Yeah.
Like the thing that's going to happen next is this. He's going to do this, and then he's going to do this, and then he's going to do this. And all of those things transpired exactly as I had predicted that they would. And then she was asking, she's like, well, where are they learning this? Like, how can you? And I was like, I don't know. That's such a good, because I don't think they are. It's like there's something, I don't know. It, fascinating just seems like the wrong word to use, but it is like, you know, like I want to understand it. How is it that so many thousands and thousands, if not millions, however, of men are there out there that are all doing the same thing, and they're all doing it naturally? Like they're not, none of them, I don't think, are like, well, she's starting to do this. Let me go find out a way. What can I do next to bring her back in? It's like they all just do the same thing. And it just, it's mind-boggling to me.
Agents who are realtors do more than open doors. They analyze market trends, interest rates, comps. They can tell you about flood zones, mixed-use zones, and decode acronyms like HOA, APR, MLS. They connect you to lawyers, contractors, even Phil, the sewer scope guy. They negotiate, coordinate, advocate for you, close the deal with you, and hand the keys to you. They bring you home. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors, right by you.
Today, every dollar counts. Make yours go further with AARP. for just $15 for your first year with automatic renewal. An AARP membership delivers benefits and savings you can use right away. You can also access trusted resources and tools to help you stay healthy, protect your money, and plan ahead. And with a second free membership for someone in your household, you'll receive AARP benefits for two. Go to aarp.org/iHeart to join today.
We're hiring at Don's Garage Doors. No experience, no problem. We provide full training, a brand new van, top-of-the-line tools, a gas card, and steady jobs with weekly pay. This isn't just a job. It's a career with real growth, great pay, and job security. Our team members go from training to six figures, and we're ready to help you do the same. Don't wait. Apply now at donsgaragedoors.com.
The other thing that was brought up momentarily in the conversation, which is what I really find fascinating, is not the right word, but fascinating, is these men, how predatory they are and how they can essentially sniff out the right person. Right is not the correct term, but the person,
the right victim for them. Yeah.
The right victim. And, you know, these women are so, you know, so low on self-esteem and so disheartened that they continue to fall for it. I have a friend in my life that I've witnessed go through it three times with three different men. Mm-hmm. Like we helped her get away from boyfriend A, and the same thing you guys talked about, you know, a multitude of times before she finally left. And the next thing we know, she's with a new boyfriend that seems amazing. And then it's right back into it. And then we finally get her away from boyfriend B, and she falls into another guy that's doing these same predatory habits. It's wild to me. I don't understand it, which is part of it. Not that I 100% see it. I'm just so uneducated in this world that it's hard for me to see. Like, because I'm not that person. You know what I mean? Like anybody that knows me knows I'm not that person, but it's just wild to continue to see them kind of go for this.
I think part of the chat, if I may, as the woman, just kidding. But kind of not kidding. No, go ahead. What do you see in the chat? That's important.
I was just saying, Mo, in the chat, and a couple of people were chiming in. She was just saying it's almost like it's its own, on the men's side, its own mental disorder. And Valerie says, yeah, coercive controllers all have the same brain wiring. And yeah, I think that's true. But yeah, definitely, Janet, your thoughts.
Well, I was just going to say, and I know I totally value you guys. I don't mean to be like, hey, shut up. I really don't. But I think, too, there are factors, like there are variables that come into play that affect the women involved. And you guys touched on some of it. Certainly, you know, the idea that you have your the sunk cost, if you will, which is a kind of a crappy way to say it. But like if you have a child or children with someone, there's a sense of like, I'm protecting my child by absorbing this abuse so that my child is safe. That's a big one. Big, big, big one. And then also, you know, there are versions of this relationship out there where it is not necessarily, you know, this person who has low self-esteem or that you would look at and identify as a potential victim as a friend of to this person or as an employer to this person or as a because they part of the reason that they don't want to believe that it's happening, this type of woman, in my experience, is that they don't think of themselves as a victim. And so they also, part of the coercive control that can happen with a woman who has this type of character is made to feel that she's participating in it and that it is just as much her fault because she's pushing back or she's being resilient or she's being like, fuck you, you know, whatever, that there's that part of the coercion becomes, this is you and me. This is our dynamic. You push me back. You know, you like it. Like, what are you going to tell your friends that you're into this? In fact, that it's a problematic show and book, but like, that's one of the things that I think Big Little Lies really blew so many people away because you really see this relationship where you see this seemingly successful, strong person who has convinced herself like, oh, I'm into this and I'm the problem or I'm part of the problem in a more what would perceive as I'm in a position of control rather than I'm being threatened and told that I can't leave because I'm garbage. Like there's just different dynamics that can be played with depending on what a woman's upbringing is and what, you know, her own self-confidence, where it shows up and where it doesn't. And then you're afraid to tell someone that you're being hurt because it doesn't mesh with the person you want people to see you as and the person that right. you are, which I think, you know, Justine mentioned that you don't want your family to know that you're in this position, because also that, like addiction, admitting it makes it real in a really scary way. And when other people know about it, then you might have to deal with it on a new level. And then the risk increases exponentially.
Yeah, I've seen that play out with people I know as well, where that seemed to be part of it, where, you know, they are a strong woman, because it's not, because people always say that, you know, they always go to the vulnerable, and there's a vulnerability there somewhere. But I don't think that's always the case, at least not from what I've anecdotally, you know, witnessed, because I've seen situations where it's like it is a very like strong, successful woman. And then the thing becomes, you know, after the fact, when I've had conversations with them, they're just like, I couldn't, like, it was too embarrassing for me to admit that because I felt so stupid. I felt so stupid yeah. for falling for this. And I couldn't admit to people that. And I just kept staying in it because I couldn't let people know that I screwed up so bad, as yeah. though it's their fault. It's there's just so many, like I said, it's such a complex thing. And I think all we can do is not, you know, when I say we talk about it, I don't think I'm the person to talk about it, but like you, Janet, and Justine, and other, you know, other women, all these women that we have in our chat that are chiming in, is just to continue to put the awareness on it, because there needs to be support. And in order for there to be support, people have to understand to an extent what's happening. You can't have that, what I've witnessed, what I talked about earlier, where they're just written like, oh, well, she's stupid because she's doing that. And then that just continues the isolation, which is all part of the plan.
And you should totally talk about it, Bob. I don't want you to feel like you're not allowed to talk about this. Your conversation with Justine was very powerful. And I was very moved to imagine you having that conversation with that young woman, because you're one of the good ones. And it's really comforting for people in the situation. It can, you know, again, not having it be a secret, that's the fact that someone felt like they could talk to you about that. Don't take that for granted for a minute. Of course, you should be talking about it. Zach should be talking about it. We should all be able to be support to people. And like so many other things that are poisonous and toxic and grow more poisonous with secrecy in the dark, that you yeah. have to put light on it, and leaving as many windows open as possible and as many conversations and openness to being available and saying, you're not a bad person. This isn't your fault. Like, if you ever need to talk to anyone, you know, just putting that stuff out there, no matter who you are, is, I think it's, you know, absolutely important and really, really valuable.
I'm glad you said yeah. that, because I was literally sitting here contemplating. And I thought about this during the episode, is it raised a lot of questions for me as a bystander. What can I do to help? What can I do to be supportive to a person? What can I do to help a person? And my concerns are, and again, this is a truly personal story, but my friend that I just discussed a few minutes ago, in one of those situations, I was kind of forced to intervene in the situation. I did intervene. She did go back to him at some point, and I feel like it made the whole situation 10 times worse when she did go back to him, because I intervened prior to that. So like, that's where my questions arise, is what do we do? I mean, I feel like obviously talking about it's extremely important, but what can we do? What can I do? What can we do? That's where my question is.
My hope, coming from just not just my voice, but as having a platform, is I just think it's so important to continue putting, and this sounds cliche and like a thing you say, but it's this, I mean this since very, very, very sincerely, that putting out more and more awareness about this has to help. It yeah. has to. It has to, you know, for someone who's living through it, I want to believe that they're like, okay, I'm not. Because what I hope to be able to do with our platform is to fight against that, at least fight against that, like, embarrassment element, that shame element, to be, for if God forbid somebody's living in that right now, but they're hearing this, and to know, like, I don't need to feel ashamed about it, that, like, this is a thing that happens to thousands and thousands, you know, I don't, who knows what the number is of women, and it's a very calculated thing that's happening. and people do understand, and there are people I can go talk to. So if all it does, if all I can do is by us talking about this and bringing it out, is that if there's one woman out there that is feeling it and now feels empowered to go talk to her friend, to go talk to her family member, to go talk to someone about it when maybe they didn't feel comfortable doing that before, then that's the most I feel like I can hope from me, is to provide that platform.
Absolutely. And, you know, to your point, as you were talking about some people who are close to people who maybe do know and just kind of throw their hands up, you know, it's probably really valuable to hear voices of strangers saying, hey, if your family isn't showing up for you on this, or if you have friends who are like, I don't get it, I don't know why you don't leave him, we're done. Then to feel like there are people outside of your immediate circle, even if your circle doesn't get it and is giving up on you, there are people outside who totally understand. There are people who've gone through it. There are people mm-hmm. who understand and will offer you support. And it's, of course, devastating when that isn't your immediate family member or it isn't your girlfriend. But that doesn't mean that there isn't anybody out there. And that can be really hard to trust. So the more people hear, like, hey, there's a whole world of people who understand this and have empathy, then, you know, take a risk and contact a shelter or, you know.
Yeah. Well, because I think it's important for the person who's living it, who's experiencing that, right? Who's experiencing like people giving up on them. I would think that it would be useful to understand kind of what's happening. Because to me, what's happening on the outside looking in is it's so easy, even if you've lived through it or you're connected to it and you somewhat understand it, when you're watching it happen to someone and you're watching the way they're reacting to it, I think that people's tendencies are just to go to this very logical lizard place in your brain where it's like, oh, you're with a person, that person's doing bad things to you, so you leave the person. It's like, what else is there? Why is this even a question? So I think that I don't know that this is important, but it feels to me important. Like if someone's doing that to you, if they're shutting you off like that, to understand, it's not that they don't love you or care about you. It's probably the opposite. But it's also they just don't understand, because you need to know that even though you're stuck in the middle of this nightmare, this complex just spider web of a nightmare, someone from the outside sees it as a very black and white situation. If they're not really dedicating the time to think it through, they're looking in on it going, okay, that person's abusing you and you're staying with them. That's dumb. And it's easy, you know, on paper, if I write that down on a piece of paper, that is dumb. But that's not, we know that that's not actually what's happening. There's so much more nuance and complexity to the situation that they're just not understanding.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that makes sense or that
it helps to consider
why people are doing that.
Yeah. To your point, reaching the people who did throw up their hands and maybe giving them the opportunity to realize that there's more to this than that. And those people thinking twice and maybe circling back and going back to that loved one and saying, hey, I am here for you. No matter how many times it takes, I am here for you because I want you to stay alive. And, you know, also, I think, again, we have such empathetic listeners. We have a lot of women listeners who are so compassionate. I think a lot of people, even if you can just imagine something that's even close to that. Like, has no one ever been at a job that they know is not a great environment, but you need to pay your mortgage and you don't know, or your rent, you don't know that you can get another job. So you just kind of suck it up and you're miserable and your boss is shitty to you and you know you're not being treated right, but you need that paycheck. Well, you might be able to justify that to yourself because you're like, well, that's less personal. That's my boss. And I at least know I can always quit. It's like, but you're not quitting. Now think about the reasons that you're not quitting and imagine that ramped up and then getting your body and your heart and your emotions tangled up in it in a much deeper way. And imagine how hard that is. Like, so many of us have been in situations. It doesn't have to be exactly a romantic relationship. So many of us have had family members that have hurt us or that don't understand us. And it's really hard to just walk away. All of those things can draw those comparisons enough to potentially open up your empathy to realize, like, oh yeah, this is God, I have been in that situation. You know, I lived in a house where I found out that there was toxic chemicals nearby, but we didn't have anywhere else to go. I didn't move right away. Well, that toxic chemical could kill you. Well, I know, but it wasn't killing me today. Today, right. We weren't sick.
And you can, and to me, like there's those analogies, you can get even more kind of basic or primal than that. Like, look at smoking cigarettes, right? So here's this thing that you're doing. There's no question that it's everything about it is bad for you. It's destroying your lungs. It's expensive. It makes you sick. There's not a good thing that comes with smoking cigarettes. A logical person can look and say, this is a bad thing. Bad thing, stop doing the bad thing. But then in that case, it's a chemical addiction, right? But there's still all these things that are drawing you to do this thing. So it's obviously not a perfect parallel, but it's just another one of those examples to understand that like there's something that can look and be very obviously on paper a bad thing and an easy decision that isn't always in reality an easy decision.
And then now add the idea, because you're right, it's not a perfect comparison, but I still think it's really powerful to imagine the absurdity of this. But imagine this, you really want to quit your job. And your boss is like, if you quit, I will call every single, this is a Harvey Weinstein situation, right? I will call every single person in our business, and you know I know people, and I will tell them that you're horrible and that no one else will ever hire you again. Or imagine that the cigarette is like, hey, you try to quit me, I will take your life. I will kill you. What would you rather do? Live and smoke cigarettes? Or know that I'm going to murder you? I mean, this is tough talk, but like that takes us back to the part of the conversation with you and Justine, where like the most, and Laura Richards and all the people that are strongly advocating and trying to educate, you are at your, it's a terrible thing to know that you're potentially at the biggest risk when you are making that incredibly scary and brave choice. You are also increasing your risk. And that's a hard thing to grapple with as part of this education, as part of these conversations, is saying like, please do this, but also you need to do it in this certain way because people need to be able to help keep you safe, because by the way, you're also going to be risking more to do that. I mean, it's really complicated.
Hey everybody, Bob here. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
Agents who are realtors do more than open doors. They analyze market trends, interest rates, comps. They can tell you about flood zones, mixed-use zones, and decode acronyms like HOA, APR, MLS. They connect you to lawyers, contractors, even Phil, the sewer scope guy. They negotiate, coordinate, advocate for you, close the deal with you, and hand the keys to you. They bring you home. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors, right by you.
Today, every dollar counts. Make yours go further with AARP. For just $15 for your first year with automatic renewal, an AARP membership delivers benefits and savings you can use right away. You can also access trusted resources and tools to help you stay healthy, protect your money, and plan ahead. And with a second free membership for someone in your household, you'll receive AARP benefits for two. Go to aarp.org/iHeart to join today.
We're hiring at Don's Garage Doors. No experience, no problem. We provide full training, a brand new van, top-of-the-line tools, a gas card, and steady jobs with weekly pay. This isn't just a job. It's a career with real growth, great pay, and job security. Our team members go from training to six figures, and we're ready to help you do the same. Don't wait. Apply now at donsgaragedoors.com.
And that kind of leads us into, in Justine's book, the whole idea behind Unreasonable Women and in these stories where a survivor commits, I hate to hesitate to even use that word, an act of violence against their abuser in order to get out of it, and how the legal system looks at that. And that, I hope I made my point clear. I wasn't sure, again, that I articulated it well in the episode, but what I was trying to get at was I feel like there's, again, with a lack of understanding from the general people who aren't involved and don't understand what these dynamics are like, that there's a timing issue where someone in the outside who says, oh, well, this person's abusing you, and so you ended up killing them to get out of it. I feel like they don't see that urgency. I think that's what's happening, is they don't see that urgency, because it's like, well, you were like, he went to work, leave. What do you mean you had to wait for him to get home and kill him? Even though, if you really understand exactly what you were just talking about, Janet, like how dangerous it is, that time of leaving, and how desperate you can get, and how it's the only way for you to fight back and get your life back, I think it's proven to be very difficult for juries to understand that, because when they hear self defense, what they want to hear is he was pointing a gun at you, and so you took your gun out first and shot him. That's self defense. Whereas this, there's a time gap between maybe a physical assault and when you took action. And I think that's one of the things is really fascinating to me about how Justine breaks all that down in the book.
Yeah, the whole kind of reasonable man law thing, like, would you do this same thing in these exact same circumstances?
Right.
And that it didn't even allow it, like, no one was thinking about women when
right,
that law
all.
Was created. Like, it just wasn't even a thing. If you don't mind, I'd love to actually read something from Nancy, who weighed in on our Facebook post, that very much pertains to what you were talking about, which is, you know, she says, I've heard that women who kill their abusers tend to get longer prison sentences than men who kill the women they're involved with. I've already pre-ordered the book. Good job, Nancy. So I'll see if that's a statistic she has also come across. And Nancy says, I'm glad she talked about how hard it is to leave. It involves completely uprooting your life. Some domestic violence shelters have people willing to pet sit for people who don't want to flee, since some don't want to leave animals behind and shelters rarely take pets. If people want to help victims of abuse, even offering to foster pets while someone is getting their life back together is a way to do that. Also, if you have professional clothes to donate, a DV shelter is a great place to do it. Even one nice outfit to wear to job interviews can be life-changing. Nancy, love everything you wrote.
Yeah, 100%. And I don't really have anything to add to it. I mean, as far as the statistic, I don't know the statistic, but it wouldn't surprise me. We did talk a little bit about on the show the work that I am familiar with regarding a potential accident with a child and how mothers are prosecuted versus fathers who are responsible. And the one, I don't remember all like the numbers and details, but it was a study that was done. And I want to say it was during like one of the seasons of the Breakdown podcast way back, where there was a child left in the backseat of a car.
Oh, yeah, that was definitely it.
Yeah, and in that one, they broke down. It was like all these instances where a mother left a child in the backseat of a car who tragically died, and a father left a child in the backseat of a car who tragically died. and the difference in which was determined to be an accident and which was resulted in like a murder conviction or a manslaughter conviction was staggering.
Yeah.
How women are like, you know, women are like hell. It just shows no matter how much, if you think you're making progress, and there is some progress, obviously, but it's like, we're not even close. Like we're not even close, because there's still, people are still walking into a courtroom and sitting down in a jury box and looking and going, oh, mom should, she's a mom, she should know better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's different than if it was a dad, because dads are dads and mom should know better. Like to me, like that's a simplistic way of looking at it. But that's what I hear when I see those statistics. It's like, why on earth would a mother always get convicted and a father doesn't, for the exact same mistake happening?
Yeah.
And that's the only, and so I can only imagine that those statistics are very similar. Yeah. In this incident as well.
I'm virtually 100% positive that Dr. Shiloh and Dr. Scott have spent at least one episode kind of talking about those discrepancies. I know that's something that Shiloh's very, very aware of, is the way the statistics bear out with how women and men are treated. And there are certain types of crimes that people are easier on women and worse on men. And mm-hmm. and then the same thing. Yeah, we're like, the way the bias and the kind of chauvinism, or in some cases, like thinking that a man is more capable. I mean, there's this discrepancy yeah. in like how we identify. Like, this is a female type crime, and mother would never do this, though. And that's why she has to be a psychopath and not this. And yeah, that's definitely like a very huge field of study. I also think I feel like I remember from the podcast Believer, I do think that Justine does talk about that in that podcast. I think she talks about those types of statistics of how much a guy gets for, you know, for example, rape or abuse or even murder versus what a woman defending herself ends up getting. And I do think that it is kind of horrifying. If yeah. memory serves, I think she talks about it and believe her.
Well, and I think you like hit the nail on the head too, how like the laws didn't consider, the self-defense laws didn't consider a woman being in a long-term abusive relationship. Like they just like literally the justice system wasn't written for you, if that's you, you know what I mean? And it's sad and it's shocking that it's like being exposed now, but it's like now something needs to happen. Like there needs to be better legislation about these things. You wonder, you know, is there a deterrence factor? If a man knew that it was like, oh, if it's proven that, you know, and again, it's such a slippery slope to legislate this, but it's like, if a man knew, it's like, oh, if I continue to do this and it's proven that I've done X, Y, and Z and she kills me, she's going to get off and she knows it, perhaps I'll move on. You know, I don't know if that's the case. It's way more complex than that. But something needs to happen, because it is like I said, it wasn't that I was condoning it. I think you all know that. But it was like, I'm always like trying to understand, like, how could a jury convict in this situation?
Right.
And I try to think, like, what, and to me, like, that's the best I can come up with is like, well, the self-defense rules say that you must be in an imminent threat of blah, 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 blah. And even though I can understand that the woman is in an imminent threat, I can certainly see how a juror could be like, well, like I said, the perfect example is like when he left and went to work, you could have just left. Right. Why didn't you do that? You know, like, it's that simple.
Well, that's actually brings us to Sarah's comment. Sarah does say, does the book differentiate between the women who saw no other way out of a situation and women who defended themselves from violence? I'm assuming you mean, Sarah, immediate violence in a domestic setting. She says, because I get juries struggling with a threat that doesn't seem imminent to them. I don't mm-hmm. get juries who penalize women who successfully defend themselves from an attacker who isn't a stranger.
Yeah, the three cases in the book, I haven't read the third one, but she talked about it. I don't think that any one of the three was like an immediate attack. I don't, if I'm remembering correctly, I could be wrong about that, but I feel like they were all, I don't think any of them were like in the throes of an attack. They got the better of the man. I don't believe that's the case.
Yeah. Well, I guess if the intention of that particular study is really, how do you be like, how does the cycle of violence inform choices of desperation that need to be looked at in a different way than he was choking me, his hands were on me, and I grabbed the knife or what have you. Mm-hmm. That perhaps juries are, yes, more likely to understand that as being a very clean situation. I mean, even look at, like, this is very off topic because it's not DV in a conventional relationship sense, but, you know, someone like Gypsy Rose Blanchard, who's a very controversial figure, but who, you know, and there are other situations like that where it's a parent and then the parent is just systematically abusing their child. And at some point, the child takes action. And mm-hmm. the question of, like, where, you know, how much accountability to assign someone, how much prison time to give someone, what constitutes self-defense versus, you know, yeah, imminent threat versus, like, institutionalized abuse, to where your brain has developed to only understand that there is no other way out. Like, you can't see another way out. It's very fascinating and scary.
And this is why my hope is that Justine has all this research and all these facts and all these stories. I'm really hoping that this turns into, I believe, her season two, because I just want to hear more and more and more about, because there's all these questions, right, that are coming up. There are people that are expanding upon what we discussed in our episode. Lots of it will be covered in the book, so make sure you get the book. But it's like, I feel like Justine could just go talk for days and days and days about what she's learned on this journey, more so than, you know, is going to be able to come out in even just a book, which, you know, the book is, I think, 300 some pages. That's a lot already.
Right.
But yeah, I just hope she just, and I know Justine, I don't know her real well, but I know her pretty well. So, and I know that it's not going to be, I wrote my book and I'm done with this. I'm sure there will be more to it. Hoping they keep going, because there's so many angles this goes from here.
Well, we have this very sensitive and, I would say, brave post from Sue that I want to share, with the caveat, Sue, that we may not have the answer to this. This may be something that we would want a Dr. Shiloh or a Justine or Laura Richards to answer. But Sue says, bottom line, in one of my stories in 1980,
I just think Sue had said in one other, I think in a previous post where she did this, that I haven't even fully read through all this, but she said we may want to issue a trigger warning for whatever she's going to say. So
I
think she's giving a story of something that actually happened to her. So just
that's
be aware
right.
of
Thank
that.
You for that. Thank you for that. Yeah, I didn't see that in the Facebook post, but that's absolutely fair. Yeah, this is definitely a firsthand account of abuse. So take care when listening, or fast forward a couple of minutes. Sue says, bottom line, one of my stories, in 1980, my abusive husband drove me to the ER and instructed me about what I should say had happened, that I had fallen out of an apple tree. After telling the truth, when I was alone with a nurse, I begged to be admitted so I could figure out how to get away. She asked, has he hurt you before? I answered affirmatively, and she replied, then you must like it. There's nothing we can do for you here. That was 46 years ago. Do hospitals now have protocol for dealing with such a situation?
I'm going to make an assumption there, just based on just some anecdotal situations that I've heard, not quite like that, but similar. I'm going to assume that there has been more progress from that, because that is horrific. I guess that's my again, you're right. This would be a Dr. Shiloh, Laura Richards, one of those. I can only speak from personally, but it seems like, yeah, there are protocols that are in place. I'm trying to think from, like, the, you know, because there's a lot of mandatory reporting things that have to be done. I'm trying to think of, from my days of being a medic, even, if things that we saw that we needed to report. So I can confidently say it's better than that, but it's also probably still not good enough.
And Sue, so sorry. So sorry that happened to you.
I am too. And there's no other questions besides that, right?
The only other one that we have is from Juan, and it is just sort of, you know, we always talk about how in follow-ups you can ask us anything. Mm-hmm. So we just have that. We just have one more question from Juan, which I'll read now. And even if you don't want to answer it, we all want to think about it and just think about it to ourselves. But Juan says, if you had a magic wand and could obtain one piece of information from any of the cases we covered, what would it be, excluding, for some reason, Juan wants to exclude the West Memphis 3 case. Juan, it's your post. I'm reading it. you want to leave that out, but Juan wants to know, you know, and then just offers up some possible suggestions from past cases of ours and of, you know, other places that, you know, things have happened, principally ours. But is there something that like comes to mind for you? I almost feel like we have to have this conversation once a year just because it is.
Yeah.
That so many of us. And well,
I read Juan's post. It came through my phone today. And as I'm reading, I'm like, oh, well, and then because Juan goes through a whole list of them, and I'm like, oh, well, that one. And then, well, yeah, also that one. And then every time I thought of another one. So like it kind of hit the big one. But like one of those is a huge mystery that I kind of almost it almost slipped my mind until Juan mentioned it. That now that they mentioned it, it's back at the forefront of my mind. Is how did the keys get in Kiao Gove's mailbox from season 3? I mean, all the cases. I mean, it's hard to, because I mean, every single case, right? There's one thing that could break the case open and tell you what happened. You know, I think like Juan mentioned, like who did Hay actually meet after school, and with Ed's case and with Sandy Melgar's case, there's always something. But that's one that is like very strange and has always bothered me and always intrigued me, like to find out who put Kiao's keys back in the mailbox from season 3. If you haven't listened to season 3, it's a wild part of the story. It just made no sense. She was carrying her keys when she went for a walk and was murdered on the walk. And then days later, her keys showed up at the mailbox at her house, like in the mailbox at her house.
Yeah, from a behavioral analysis perspective, that choice is so fascinating. It makes you wonder, is it someone who did not kill her, who had guilty knowledge, who felt remorse on behalf of the person who did it? Is the person who did it, is it totally unrelated and we just can't even imagine where they came from? You know, it's so, it's crazy making.
Yeah, very much. So everybody, you know, next week when we come back, chime in on what you think you'll be or what would be the one thing you want to know. And with that being said, we're going to go ahead and we're going to wrap this thing up. I think next week it's going to be just me and Zach, right? You're on assignment next week, right, Janet?
Yeah, I am, unfortunately.
We've got
And you. Then, yeah, we got it. And then, so it's going to be the Bob and Zach show. So the no adults in the room. It's going to go well. And then, and then remember after that, so after next week's follow-up, then we're going to be off for a week. So with all that being said, we love you guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. Make sure you stay compassionate, stay informed, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @TruthJusticePod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
This is Danielle Fishel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
As cat parents, Ryder and I know the feeling of being ignored by our cats. I often wonder, does my cat even love me?
Well, there's only one solution to solve that. Sheba.
Feed your cat Sheba and go from feeling ignored to truly adored in 12 days, guaranteed or your money back.
Sheba has so many incredible products that can satisfy even the pickiest eater.
Like new Sheba Grilled, made in the USA with the finest ingredients from around the world. They are savory strips in a succulent sauce that cats are sure to love. And it's 100% complete and balanced with essential vitamins and nutrients for adult cats like my Bill. Made without artificial flavors or preservatives, no corn, wheat, or soy. To learn more, check out Sheba.com.
What's up, y'all? Summer's got a different tempo. Everything's a little looser, brighter. One plan turns into another. You hear something, you stay a little longer. Next thing you know, you're somewhere you didn't plan to be. It's those in-between moments. That's where the ideas hit. Conversations stretch out, little memories sneak up on you. And sometimes, it's just about what's in your hand. That color, that chill. The new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks. Guava and passion fruit flavors with mango pineapple flavored pearls. Yeah. That feels like summer before you even taste it. Funny how one small stop becomes the best part of the day. Start your summer rhythm with Starbucks. Try the new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks.
Introducing the all-new Mazda CX-5, featuring more connection.
Hey Google, where's the nearest Pilates class?
Safety that has your back.
More discovery on the scenic routes.
More passion in the details,
and more control in changing weather. The all-new Mazda CX-5. More to move every side of you. See it in 5 films at MazdaUSA.com/5sides.
Google is a trademark of Google LLC. Sequences shortened and simulated.